The Truck and Driver podcast is sponsored by Fortune Tires, who manufacture high-quality, durable tires designed for operators who are looking for exceptional value across every application. Fortune Tires is proud to partner with International Tires, the exclusive distributor of their truck tires in the UK. For more info, visit internationaltires.com/fortune or call 0121 552 6888. Drive forward with Fortune Tires. Hello and welcome to the Truck and Driver podcast. I'm Dougie Rankin and I'm joined today by
Matt Ireland.
It's all happening. It's super busy in the world of truck and driver. We're just back from Assen, first time I've ever been there, and I can see why for some people it's like a religious awakening. Matt,
yeah,
have you ever been there?
No, I really want to go. It usually clashes with a dive holiday that I do every year. This year that was already full and I was hoping to go. However, as I've recently moved house, which I'm sure I've rattled on about, the building work I had to have or had done overran and cost an awful lot more, which skinted me completely out, and I simply could not afford to go. I was absolutely gutted. And I messaged a good friend of mine, Gogsy Damien Brew, over in Ireland today, asked him a couple of questions. He was over there, just said, I think it was his first time as well. It was absolutely amazing. And he took over 3,000 photos. Which is just bonkers, absolutely bonkers. I see it every year on the socials and whatnot, and my good friends James Cartwright and Ben Sheldrake go pretty much religiously every year. James is a custodian of H.C. Wilson's lovely Scania 141. They make the pilgrimage over, and it just looks, it does look phenomenal. And yeah, I do need to get there. So what's it actually like from somebody who's actually been?
Gigantic, the scale of it, it has to be seen to be believed. It's set at an enormous racetrack, and the whole of the middle of the racetrack's filled with lorries. There's lorries all the way around the racetrack, and most of them have got their trailers on as well.
Yeah,
there's so much space. I mean, I went out with John and Alex, or Eck, from Rocks Off Gravel when I was there at the Rocks Off, kind of driving sort of full time. And it was John that had suggested it, and it kind of was one of those things where, you know, it gets one of those things people suggest and you're like, yeah, and it just passes by, but we're like, no, book something and spend some money on it, because then we're committed to going. So John booked us the flights. So there's obviously a lot of different ways that you can go to Assen. Some people, if you're lucky and you're applying and you get your truck in, obviously you've got to do that, but I mean, you can get the boat across or you can fly. And once you get into Schiphol, you can actually get the train down there. I spoke to a couple of guys who got the train, said it took about an hour and a half, which is easy. Or you can get into Schiphol. And what we did was hired a car and got an Airbnb, which was about 40 minutes away from the circuit, which was a very good price as well, which is why we ended up choosing it. You can go for hotels that are really close to the track. I think Mel Hodges was there with a number of friends, and they'd booked a hotel, but I think it was, they were talking four figures for not that many nights, but it was all inclusive, which is kind of odd for a hotel in Holland, and it did have a bowling alley in it.
Yeah.
Which I've never heard of in a hotel, but yeah, we booked the flights. The flights came to, well, I'll work this out, so I'll give you an indication of how much it cost for us all. The flights from Glasgow to Schiphol came to £500 for the three of us. The Airbnb, which was a little cottage built in 1760, it had three beds in it, self-catering, lovely thing, full of character, was just under £400. So that was for Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So for the three nights, it came to, what's that, the, in fact, it wasn't as much as, wasn't it? Was it actually as much as 400?
Was it euros?
Yeah, it might have been. I think I'd worked out it came to £93 £93 each for us. It must have been 300 odds for the Airbnb. Because, oh, and I put the, then I put the insurance on it. So you were talking £93 for three nights for the each of us. So, I mean, you would be spending much more than that on a hotel. Obviously, you've got to go and drive, get yourself to and from the circuit. But for a first-time experience, yeah, that was fine. John was actually, he was an absolute trooper. He's been on crutches with sciatica. He's been absolutely crippled with it, off work for a bit. But I think he did about 10 miles on crutches over the weekend. So, well done to him for that. So the Airbnb, really good value. They, I don't know if you've ever done Airbnbs before, but they can be totally random.
Yes.
It just is what it is. The guy who came out that owned it was like the most Dutch guy ever. He had like maroon trousers and these like sort of sparkly shoes. And
well, they weren't clogs?
No.
Oh.
Suit kind of jacket, funny mustache. It looked like he must be like a like some sort of lecturer at a university or something. But that was, yeah, that was absolutely spot on. So you're talking 500 flights, 300 and some for the Airbnb. Now, the car hire, I booked that through work. And I was looking at the cars. There was a huge jump. If you go from a compact car, which is like a Focus, or whatever the equivalent, like a Golf, if you jump up from that, the cost like doubles. So I was like, all right, whatever, compact car. So I decided, seeing as it was left-hand drive, I would just get myself an automatic. Because I'm like, yeah, why worry? So I booked myself a compact automatic, and it came up Kia, something I'd never heard of or similar. And I was like, yeah. And it was €155 for the car, but that doesn't give you the proper insurance, because they always give you that price with hired vehicles. And then when you get there, they tell you that if you don't take this extra insurance, if anything happens to the car, you're basically liable for the entire cost of it.
Yeah.
So, and then they hit you with the insurance, which was an extra €37.50 a day, which obviously like doubled the cost of it. But I was like, no, I'm wanting the insurance. So Friday, Saturday. So they, yeah, probably about £300 for the car.
Yeah,
with the good insurance. I wasn't taking it without having that the proper cover, just in case.
Well, it takes all the worry out of it then, doesn't it, you know?
Yeah, you've got to do it with any sort of hire car. But I hate how they put the cheap price up, and then it's like, yeah, basically the insurance you've got is basically just to say that you're legal to drive on the road. If anything happens, you are screwed.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not a lot of fun, is it?
But the good thing was, because I'd booked an automatic car, when I was expecting to get some little Kia puddle jumper thing, he goes, we have got you a Golf GTI. So I was like, wahey. And it was the full shooting match, 262 horsepower, DSG gearbox, 6,000 kilometres the thing had done. And I was like, yeah, beauty. And that was because I'd booked an automatic. They obviously didn't have any kind of the low spec stuff. So I got a free upgrade into something that probably would have been about double the price.
Yeah.
And I really behaved myself in it, because I've been hammered with cameras in Holland before going round Amsterdam, like 2 miles over the speed limit and getting done for it. So, yeah, we did consider going to the Nürburgring as a diversion with it. But, yeah, bonus, because we had it was like 170 kilometres to the Airbnb, and then it was another 40 to the track as well. So we had a fair distance to do in it.
Yeah,
wonder. Oh, beautiful, beautiful car. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, loved it. So, yeah, that all went great. John booked the tickets for the weekend. I think it's about £25 a day,
right?
Passes for the weekend pass, and not much of a queue to get in the morning. And what I kind of realised straight away was we made the rookie error of going in quite early on the Saturday.
Yeah.
Because it goes on all night.
Yeah.
You don't really want to come in, because when we saw Mel and a few of the others, are like, we only got here about 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
And I was like, we've been here since like sort of 10 o'clock. So by the time it was starting to get dark, the rain had came on. Obviously, John's on his crutches as well. And both Eck and I were just shattered as well. And we were like, you know what, we're going to call it a night. So there's fireworks and things on I think at about midnight, and obviously when it gets dark, oh, there's the big light show and everything, so mm-hmm. we did miss out on that, but that was just a rookie mistake of coming in too early.
Yeah. So
next year, I would definitely sort of come in around lunchtime rather than come in early, because then you get to see all the stuff that's on at night. Having said that, it did absolutely tank it down with rain at one point.
Oh, right.
It might not have been that much fun. Anyway, what else was interesting? Beer. Daff were handing out free beer all day on the stand.
Fantastic.
Volvo, you had to buy a glass. The glass was €12.50.
Right.
But once you had the glass, you had
free beer.
Yeah.
Right.
And can it all the stands had that kind of system on it? Mercedes-Benz had a cracking big stand. Iveco had a big stand. Scania had a big stand, which was, they had some sort of thing on the go. In fact, I don't know what was going on at the Scania stand. They must have had a celebrity on it talking or something like that, but they had a really annoying jingle that kept playing.
Right.
Something like, Scania, the most beautiful truck in the world.
Sounds like a Gillette advert.
Yeah, or a fanny pad advert or something. And that was playing like every, like, 2 minutes or something in the Scania stand, and I was like, I need to get out of here.
But
the stands were, the hospitality was like phenomenal. And as you just know, like all the Brits had like descended upon the manufacturer stands until the drink stopped being served at 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
So, yeah, small glasses of beer, but many of them were being consumed. So there were quite a few very, merry British folk that we saw wandering about as time got on.
Excellent.
But yeah, the truck, I mean, the trucks, yeah, I mean, what can you say? I mean, Dutch trucks, the standard of them is just phenomenal.
They're a whole other level, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, they don't have 6 weekly inspections or the sort of the MOT or the maintenance worries that we've got here. Although it looks very obvious with all those trucks that they must keep right on top of them, but it seems that, I think it was it Mick Gilley was telling us, it's just like the taxation's like different there. You get tax breaks if you spend stuff on accessories and doing up your lorry.
Yeah.
Because they're happy to see it go back into the economy. So it's beneficial to go and, you know, go to town on your truck and put stacks on it and lights and fancy jobs and everything. It actually helps them out. And I've also been informed that a Volvo is actually more expensive than a Scania.
Wow.
In Holland.
That surprises me.
Yeah, and that's just because Scania charge us more in the UK, apparently.
Right, yeah.
That's just because that's the way that it is. Yeah, I was surprised at that as well.
Interesting.
But if you've wondered, I'd always wondered what the point of like the lowest power V8 was, like the 520 and 530 V8s latterly. They've stopped doing them now. They don't make the low power V8 anymore. There's loads of them over there, like loads of them. They love that entry-level V8, so dozens and dozens of them. And you know what's really weird? I did not see a single 540-powered Scania.
All right.
Not a single one. There are a few 560 Supers and a few 500s and stuff, but not a single 540 and loads and loads and loads of 520, 530 V8s, which I found quite curious. I don't know what you know about Holland, like Dutch weight regulations with trucks. It must be quite complicated because they run on 6 axles, but they've also got the longer outfits with the rigid, with the dolly, with the long trailer.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've got trailers with funny axle spreads. And that is like a full sort of 3,000-word feature in itself, all the different combinations of stuff that you can have in Holland. There's more space over there as well, it seems. Their villages and the places where trucks go in the road network isn't as cramped as the UK.
Yeah, yeah. I think from memory, I think on 6 axles, they can run at 50 ton, I think it is. That's obviously just in the Netherlands because you can't go to Germany or the UK at that weight or anywhere. But I'm not sure if there's a greater weight concession for like the rigid with an Arctic trailer. It would kind of make sense there possibly would. But again, that system, we should adopt that in this country. Just put a height limit on, get rid of these blooming double deckers and have a rigid but mostly for trunk and stuff. You're not, you know, don't allow them into towns and whatnot. Be sensible about it, but just have, you know, so you can have like a 20-foot container with two 20-foots on a skelly and just trunk them, you know, just yeah. things like that. Because in theory, like from the Netherlands, that combination, as long as the weights and whatnot are right, they can drive into Germany with that. They can drive up into Denmark, into Scandinavia, because it's all legal there. They can even go into the Czech Republic, I believe, because I've seen that sort of layout over there. France has got a bit of a funny one. I've seen, look, 20-foot skellies with, like, two of them. So it's like a road train, but with two 20-foot skellies. But then you jump into Spain, and once again, Spain, you can then have this rigid with an Arctic trailer running there as well. We're just lagging behind as always. But yeah, I don't know if there's greater weight concessions, but I know that I've got a couple of Dutch friends who listen to this quite regularly. So I'm hoping that one of them will send me a bit of a message and they'll fill me in on what you sort of can and can't do as such.
Yeah, well, I'll have to learn. Well, I'll definitely be back at Acid next year. I met Martin Tomlinson from Volvo Trucks UK. He'd brought over their left-hand drive 780.
Yeah, what a machine.
It was his first time at Acid as well, and he was just the same, just mind-blown at the sheer scale of it. But yeah, it's kind of like a recce this year, I think, because now I know what I'm looking at and I'm sort of dealing with as to how to get sort of coverage out of it. I'll take a photographer next year and I'm going to speak to the Truckstar magazine to see if I can get myself like a bit of a guide and a fixer, because they had like race trucks doing burnouts up and down the track, and there was a decibel competition, and there was obviously the awards for the most beautiful truck in all the different categories and stuff. So yeah, I'll get right in sort of front and centre of it next year. Now that I know what I'm looking at, you think to yourself, I've not seen any. I was thinking to myself, I've not seen any Iveco S-ways. That's curious. And then I walked around the corner and there was like 30 of them all in a row. They'd obviously all got themselves together in the one place. And there were a few bits like that dotted about where there seemed to be like pockets of Ivecos. I'm trying to think what else did we see that was a bit rarer in terms of like modern trucks. The DAF XG Plus, they just go for the XG Plus over there. Obviously, there's a lot of XGs in the UK because there's a big price jump to the Plus, and you get a lot of space in an XG anyway. Everyone over there seems to be XG Plus.
Yeah.
Where did we see? MANs. Yeah, a lot of nice MANs. I did manage to find a manual one as well.
Yeah.
Manders Transport. Lovely looking blue thing, which had its doors open, and I was like, ooh, it's a manual. I got a video of it. Put it on.
But the irony of that, you've got a rental car and you specifically went for an automatic.
that's the thing now. Well, I've got my Cadillac car, my Cadillac BLS, which is a 6-speed automatic, and I do like that. I mean, manual lorries are, you know, it's something which comes from the heart, from the enjoyment. Oh, yeah. The enjoyment of driving, of controlling a machine mechanically, that's what that comes from. It doesn't really make any it doesn't make any sense to, you know, drive one sort of full time these days. There's no, you're not getting.
There's no benefit, is there?
Yeah, there's no benefit out of it. They're so clever, the modern autos. But I was just texting somebody there, talking about DAFs. And I was like, I would love to get a last of the line CF 530 tag space cab terracotta trim with a stack 16 speed manual. If somebody could get me that truck to drive full time and it was a decent job, I would seriously consider it, because it's last chance saloon for all these trucks, because that truck, they are out there. I have seen at least one of them.
Yeah.
Even a midlift. I'd take a midlift. Or an XF, I suppose, although I'm weird that I want the CF because it feels more like a modern version of the Foden Alpha.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's last chance saloon with that kind of stuff. They are kind of fading away.
Yeah. Going back to the competitions at Assen, what surprised me to learn was there's not actually a category for vintage trucks, I'm told.
No, there wasn't one for the old trucks. The old truck section, you had like young timers and old timers. And I take it like young timers must be like stuff from like the noughties and the 90s.
Yeah.
And then you've got your old timers. And that was unbelievable. The stuff that was in there, like things that I just, Saurer,
Saurer from Switzerland, Swiss built,
Hanomags, FTFs.
Henschel, FTFs were Dutch built.
Yeah, there was old Fiats, bonneted DAF 2800s.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I didn't even know they made them. I don't, are they like ex-military or something?
I think they were used in certain applications, especially in the Netherlands, the bonneted ones. I think like cement mixers and things like that, I believe.
Oh.
But I could be wrong.
Every generation of like Scania T-cab going from like an 80 series... one series, two series, three series, all sorts of different combinations of those. Just anything old that you could think of.
Yeah.
Sort of unusual things. A couple of absolutely gorgeous DAF 3600 space cabs.
Just
immaculate. And again, that has got, I would say that is, as far as European trucks go, that is the best looking truck ever made. And a few people agree with me on that, that is just, I don't know, there's just something that was just always right about those.
Yeah.
Just from as a little boy, I knew with that, like they said, 3300 or 3600 ATI.
With little red eyes.
Yeah, when I was like 5 years old, I was like, that must be good. That must be a good truck if it's got that kind of stuff on it. And they were beautiful. I think there were five or six ERFs. It was either five or six that had come from the UK. The chaps from Oldham, Barrett's are a couple there.
Yeah.
Yeah, EC14s. Andra Dixon had his EC11 over. There were a few other ones. No Fodens, sadly. Not a single Foden, not even an Alpha was there. And that was. I think the ERFs were pretty much the extent of the old-timer British stuff. Unless there might have been some Scanias and Volvos, and I'd have to look back through my pictures. So again, took so many.
Yeah, obviously James was there with the HC Wilson 141. Andrew Child was there with his beautiful 111, the Martin Trucks Scania. Yeah,
I've probably got pictures of them, but of course they don't. I'm thinking specifically like British made trucks.
Leylands and whatnot.
Yeah, I don't think there were any Leylands there. It was only ERFs. I was surprised at that there wasn't like a 4000 or an Alpha there.
Yeah, because there's a few sold in the Netherlands, wasn't there? So, and there's even a couple. There's even at least one, or there was one Dutch registered Leyland road train as well, because it's been to Gaydon as well. But then I know that Assen isn't for everybody, because I know a few friends. Mm. It's like Truckfest. It's not for everybody. A lot of people love it. A lot of people don't. It's just, I can see why a lot of people wouldn't like Assen. I think it's sort of too in your face and a lot of noise. And
as a party weekend, there was a lot of guys who'd, I'm assuming that they would take like a three-piece suite furniture from the house and go and lay it out in front of the trucks. And some of them had made bars from truck cabs and stuff. And I must
see, that seems to be quite a trend, really, doesn't it? Is take your own tractor unit cab and have it as a bar.
Oh, yeah, some of them were really impressive. I got a set of pictures of them. And then you had the furniture. And I'm assuming that it's furniture that's either been, like, picked up off, like, Gumtree or the equivalent, or it's old and it's getting thrown out.
Yeah.
And it's not going to go back, because most of it looked pretty old. But I bet you there's probably going to be somebody's wife comes home from work and discovers that the living room is empty of furniture because he's gone and taken it all to Assen. some of the stands, like the haulage companies had set up like big sort of bars, gazebos that were almost as impressive as what the manufacturers had for their guys. And it's as a party weekend, there's a lot of beer getting drunk. there is a lot of loud music. Like, there was a guy sitting on a sofa with a beer on Sunday morning in between two speakers with, like, rave music pounding out and just not a thing in the world bothering him, just sitting there chilling out. And I'm like, how can you sit there? That is deafening. That would, like, drive me up the wall. The weather wasn't hot enough, but they do get skips and line them and fill them with water, and you end up having tippers used as slides and all sorts of stuff. But unfortunately, it wasn't quite warm enough for all that to happen. Although it did stay largely dry, the weather was kind to us. But yeah, it can get not bad rowdy, like friendly rowdy, sort of, you know.
Yeah.
In a good sort of way, but if you're looking for a relaxing sort of chilled atmosphere, that is not it. It's like a massive festival, a celebration of trucks. But it's, you know, the Dutch love a beer, and obviously there's a lot of Belgian trucks there as well, and guys from, you know, Germany. And stuff, and, you know, as far as I'm aware, there wasn't any trouble or anything like that. And I'm just kind of trying to think, imagine if we gave away free beer all day on a stand in the UK. What do you think might happen?
Oh, yeah, that's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, there'd be people, like, vomiting in bins if they made it that far, getting carted, getting carted out. That's enough for you, sir.
Yeah,
I would recommend anybody to go and do it. It's not unaffordable by any means, especially if a group of you get together and get an Airbnb. The one downside to the one that we had was we didn't buy any feckin' insect spray. And there must have been, like, a mosquito, or these Dutch mosquitoes must have got in beside me in my bedroom at night, because I counted, like, 17 bites in total. Little buggers went to town on me. So you better rookie mistake that. We'll know for next time out not to get caught out with that. Highly recommended. We've got a show report going in the magazine. Andy had said to me that Jessica Granger was doing a show report on it. I didn't see Jessica at the event, but I just put together loads and loads of stuff for social media. So our social media lady, Katie, has got she's got nearly 20 minutes of footage of just trucks moving about. And I've got hundreds and hundreds of pictures to go through that I need to kind of sort out into type. And, of course, it's now, upon the recording of this, it's Truckfest Scotland this weekend, and I'm just back from a meeting because, of course, our company runs RTX, the big expo, and they've just launched RTX Scotland. So they're having an RTX event at the Scottish Exhibition Centre on the 19th and 20th of November this year. So there's an RTX Scotland. So there's going to be, like, a truck show, all the manufacturers, suppliers and everything going to be heading into the SEC. So that would be something to go to if you can get the time off. Obviously, it's kind of aimed at, you know, bosses, hauliers and stuff, but that's one. And they've also launched RTX Ireland, which is going to be taking place on the 15th and 16th of April 2026 at the Icon FX in Northern Ireland.
Right. So,
yeah, they've got two regional RTX events on the go now, which is, yeah, just a massive gathering of everyone to do with the truck industry, but you don't have to go so far to attend to go and do it. So, yeah, I had a good time this afternoon. I caught up with the guys from AM Philip, who they've just got their first two tag axle S-ways ready to go, but they are the old style S-way.
Right.
They don't have the new kind of fancy digital dash in them, because obviously it's taken a long time to get these things ready. So the first 2024, as they're called, facelift S-way with a tag on it, that's on its way soon. So if you want a tag axle S-way, you can buy one. You have to go and see AM Philip in Forfar, though.
Yeah.
So I've spoken to them, spoke to the guys from Terberg who make the shunting tugs.
Yeah.
You'd be amazed to know how fast you think a Terberg can go.
Well, I've seen some in action.
Yeah.
But, 30 mile an hour.
Yeah, you're pretty really? Much right. They're limited to 27 mile an hour.
Wow.
But I'd ask the guys, I says, how quick do they get to 27 mile an hour? Because I'm pretty sure a Terberg shunting tug in full send could out accelerate a McLaren.
Yeah, seems to be that way.
When the shunter's on it, it is one of the quickest moving vehicles on Earth.
Yes, absolutely. But Terberg, I mean, they still do a lot of specialist vehicles and like 10x8 tippers and all things like that. And they sort of utilize, it used to be Volvo cabs. I don't know if they still do or not.
They do bin wagons.
That's right, yeah. I've always had a bit of a soft spot.
Specialised things,
So. Same as Ginaf in the Netherlands as well, who used to use DAF cabs and stuff like that. So I do like a specialist old ball.
Yeah, there was one of them there. I don't know, is it Ginaf or Ginaf? G-I-N-A-F.
We're probably both pronouncing it wrong.
Tomato, tomato.
Yeah, Ginaf or something. Ginaf or something.
Yeah, there was one of them at the show with a DAF CF cab on it.
Yeah.
But I went for Ginaf on the basis of gin, as in the drink.
I'm waiting for it. I'll have a voice note from one of my Dutch friends with a correct pronunciation that I'll try and put in the next podcast and probably absolutely destroy it.
I do. Yes, and aside from talking to Philip, I'd spoken to Terberg and we're going to be visiting them at their place in Halifax because they do also have a haulage fleet. They've got 3 Volvo lorries which transport the tugs and other stuff around the country. So we're going to go and visit them and learn about all things Terberg, which is really good. And I was speaking to the PR lady from Isuzu as well to see if we can get a couple of little lorries in the magazine, because Isuzu are right at the lighter end of things. But at RTX, I had a couple of them with some really specialised equipment on them. So we can... variety is the spice of life. So
certainly is.
Inquiring about maybe getting some Isuzus to feature as well. So, yeah, productive afternoon prior to Truckfest Scotland, where we're meeting up with the ladies from Girl Talk at the weekend. We're going to be doing some articles on some of them going forward with our trucks. One of them, Lucy, she's a mechanic, so we're going to be doing a feature on her. Yeah, busy time.
It's good.
Been non-stop as well. I've got the Volvo XXL 540 tag as well coming up as well.
Yeah.
Which I am looking forward to getting out and using, getting back on the road in. I'm going to have to sort out what I'm going to do with that. I'm going to have to sort that out. I'm going to put that down in my list of things because dates got changed on that. Yeah, that'll be good. Apparently, in the UK, 70% of Volvo FH sales are now aeros.
Really?
Yeah, but it's just purely because it's the new style and people like new things. Because you can still buy the standard FH, but I don't think there's as much of a price difference as there was initially. So loads of guys are just going for the aero because they like it.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, I think it's a nice-looking truck.
Yeah.
Be fair.
The poor Volvo designers that designed that and worked so hard with their hundreds and thousands of hours in the wind tunnel making that truck so perfectly aerodynamic. Like, they don't even want you to put a sun visor on it.
Yeah.
They weren't expecting to happen what has happened, which is... Loads of guys have just bought them because they're like, yeah, we think it looks cool and now we're going to stick as much stuff to it as we possibly can to make it ever less aerodynamic.
Yes.
And I think I found one at Assen and I was like, that has got to be the least aerodynamic FH aero. It had a bull bar on it, it had air horns, a massive Dutch headboard that had mirrors on it.
Yeah,
huge set of spotlights all round and everything, and I was like, "Yep, that has got to be that. That is the standard to beat." But it is, and if you've got the right application to have the whole package as aerodynamic, then it really does work supremely well. But yeah, I don't think they expected people to just go out and buy them because they're like, yeah, I don't care about the aerodynamics. Yeah, we drive our foot to the board every bell.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they are in actual official aero form, as you say, without even a sun visor. From what I'm told by hauliers, they are just absolutely phenomenal on fuel. They really are. Just sort of knocking everything out of the water.
Yeah, you need to have the trailer to match it. I had one in the tankers, and it didn't really do any. It didn't do any better than the Renault Range T High, which is like a block of flats.
Yeah.
But if you get it with like a matching fridge or a matching cutting cider,
those doubles
package. Yeah. Then you can get some really. You can get some funky fuel economy figures out the turbo compounds. One of those are guys. There are guys in kind of light medium work that are getting teens.
Yes.
At times.
Yeah. Regularly.
Which is just bonkers. Truck progress in the last 5 years in certain areas is just—it's been too quick in some ways, as smart dash owners have discovered.
Yeah,
but you know, it is what it is. That sort of stuff. It's all going in the one direction.
Yes.
Now, I'm delighted to tell everybody that the British special is very nearly upon us. At the moment, we're working on a sort of heavy haulage, abnormal load specialist issue. And the one after that is my British issue, which we have completed the photography on. And it's just a matter of getting it all written up. And one of my last jobs I had to do for that was to visit Andy Adams at R. Adams and Son in Henley in Arden.
Yeah.
Because he has just got back on the road the Foden 4000 that he bought brand new back in like 1991.
Right.
And he managed to get it back again. Andrew Conley ended up with it at one point, who's like the Foden guru. So he ended up with it. And then Andy eventually managed to get it back and he's just had it restored because it's got the Perkins engine and it needed some work. And the Perkins engines are a little bit tricky to get bits for.
Right.
Because I think he needed like a liner for the engine, but they won't just make one set of liners. You've got to wait until we've got enough orders where they'll tool up the factory to make a whole batch.
Oh, right.
So there was some delays with that, but they got the engine rebuilt in it, and I think it was a TX400. And he said that right from the off, that lorry was a flying machine. It was a beast of a thing. It would go with the 14-litre Cumminses. And Andrew Conley said exactly the same thing to me today when I was speaking to him about something unrelated. Says that was always a weapon, that lorry. Because he was going to get a Volvo originally, I think, but for some reason when he was growing up, he just loved Fodens. He was a massive Foden fan. And Andy was like, Dad, no, can I get a Foden?
Yeah.
And he was like, okay, you weirdo, if you want. So they went and got him that TX400 13-speed Road Ranger. Now, I'd learned something which is of great importance to Foden 4000 owners as well, to do with the gear cables, because there are two sets of gear linkage cables, and this will be relevant to a tiny number of people, but they may be very interesting. If you've got the red cables, which are the Morse cables, they're the crap ones. They're the ones that make the gear change really difficult. What you need are the Cable Tech cables, which are green. They are always better, and they either take out or put in some kind of linkage assembly. I can't remember which way it is, which makes the gear shift on them far better, because back in the day, those 4000s, every one seemed to have a different gear shift in it, whereas the ERFs and the Seddon Atkinsons are a lot more consistent. So you could get a good one or like a bad one. But Andy took us out a run in the 4000 and he never missed a single gear.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, like going out in that, shows you how kind of far we've come. You would know about it if you did a week in one of those.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
That's for sure. But that was just to kind of finish off the issue, because he's also got his Alpha 8-wheeler as well, which also belonged to Andrew Conley, and I used to drive an Alpha 8-wheeler, so I had a shot at that as well, because I'm doing a kind of retro road test on the Alpha 8-wheeler, because that's a truck which is sorely missed today, if they still made the Alfa with a Euro 6 engine in it, in the 8-wheeler format, they would still be selling a few hundred of those a year, I reckon. It'd be a really popular truck with a rubber suspension on the back. But like starting it up and moving it, like the weight of the steering and the clutch and everything like that as well,
yeah.
Even like as like a relatively sort of fairly modern truck, saying that, isn't it, like 20 years old now? Yeah, like the difference between having something like that and then hopping on a Volvo with dynamic steering, there's just the, yeah, things have moved on so much so quickly. But yeah, that Cummins sounded beautiful through yeah. that Eminox stack, and I'm like, oh, I could so go for a week on a manual Alfa, like I really could.
Yeah, just a week.
Yeah. Well, I've got Euro Truck Simulator working again because my nephew had come over to stay, and I'd done an update and I'd wrecked the game and I'd lost my Foden Alfa, which I had in it, which has got a 600 brake Caterpillar engine in it because it's a computer game.
Yeah.
And it took me 2 nights of downloading updates and sorting things out to eventually get this bloody game to work again. And it does. It all works perfectly now. So I've now got my 600 brake Alfa back. And he's coming to stay on Saturday night again. And the last time I'd looked, because I was like, I'd switched the speed limiter off in the lorry in the game so I could drive it like sort of 58, 59, yeah. chip on. And then I was watching the game and I was like, how fast are you going? He's like, 74. Well, let's go any faster. I'm like, oh, you, stop that. And of course, and then I would like leave the room for a minute and hear that some idiot bus is driven into me. So I've just looked at my bank balance on my game and I'm like, Doogie, you're 45 years old and it's a computer game. And I'm like, yeah, he's just about bankrupted me. So I'm thinking, I'm going to have to actually go on the game and spend a few hours doing a couple of jobs to get some money back in the bank for him coming back over, because he's totally sussed out the manual box on it.
Yeah.
No problem. Yeah, loves it. But I keep telling him, it's a lorry simulator. Stop driving it like that. That's why you keep... That's why you keep having accidents. You're not supposed to be going that speed. but of course, you know, he's just turned 13. But that's, he's kind of getting the bug, the bug for it now.
But that kind of dovetails into one thing I was going to talk about, which you had messaged me. Was there's an article in the latest Motor Transport, isn't there, about
yes? Let's round this podcast episode off with an interesting couple of news articles which were published in Motor Transport.
Yeah, so I didn't actually see the one with drivers stating that hauliers were too greedy, basically. And now a lot of hauliers have actually sort of come back and said, well, hang on a minute, you know, we're running at very small margins and so on and so forth. And
what it was Motor Transport had asked some drivers about things in the industry, and the drivers have come back and said, we're getting paid peanuts, you know, it's hardly above sort of like minimum wage, and you know, the hauliers are greedy and all this. And I'm like, and I was kind of surprised at that, and I realised that haulage and how you get on with jobs and what opportunities and what pay, it seems to be very geographical.
Yes,
because you could make a really good wage driving a lorry these days. And I know that if you, at certain times you might look at like hourly rates, the government keep bumping the minimum wage up and up and up. And if you look at minimum sort of wages, sort of hourly rates, then you can get wound up on it. But you can get an incredible amount of hours driving a truck. Like you might get some crazy wage at Aldi or Lidl, but you're only going to get a tiny amount of hours a week.
Yeah.
So in the lorry, things can really accumulate. And there's a lot of guys in lorries that are making 40, 50 grand.
Yeah.
If you go into specialist stuff, yeah, a lot of them in Scotland, the threshold for going into like the 42% tax bracket is 43,900, I think. And there's a lot of guys starting to get pulled into that now with a bit of overtime or a bonus or whatever. So wages have gone up quite a lot.
Yeah.
So I was surprised that there were drivers that were saying, you know, we are not paid enough, we are struggling. And you, is it down to where you are in the country?
I think there's an awful lot of factors. Obviously, yes, the hourly rate is bad and we do a lot of hours, which is as we all know, makes it an antisocial job, but it's a job we love, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I mean, I've done a few basic sums. So if let's just say there's a haulier and he's got 10 trucks. So he's got 10 drivers and he gives them all a pound pay rise. Well, that's £120. Well, if they all do 12 hours a day, 10 of them, that's £120 more he's got to find per day, which is £600 a week, £2,400 a month, and that's £31,200 in a year before any rates of change, anything like that. Also, that people need to bear in mind, national insurance has rocketed. Yeah,
put the national insurance contributions up for employers as well, which is really hurting places like cafes.
Yes.
They seem to be getting hit especially bad with this as well.
Yeah. And also, I mean, a lot of hauliers on general haulage as such are working on sort of 1-2% profit margin. It's so minimal. So to find an extra £31,000 a year before you've even started is going to be exceptionally difficult. And I've seen rates being offered for jobs, and some of the rates are frankly absolutely shocking. However, the flip side of it, when they say that hauliers are greedy, some are to a degree. I know a friend of mine, he's left a well-established company who are pretty large, who pay minimum wage. They will not pay for parking. They won't pay for this, and they'll knock you for that. And yet, you know, they are a profitable company. And I've also got another friend who's in a very similar position. He's left a bit of a smaller haulier, but again, they will not pay for parking. They won't do this. They won't help you out. And he'd been there over a decade when he handed his notice in, didn't even get a thank you. No, you know, yeah. Is there anything we can do for you? Basically, like, right, see you later. He's now gone on to an own account haulier who is the polar opposite and probably couldn't, you know, and so there is a bit of everything. And again, the geographical thing, one of these friends lives in Kent, and when I was chatting to him before, a while back, about wages and whatnot, I was stunned at how bad the wages are in Kent. I dare say I'm going to get a lot of messages now from people saying, oh, they're really, really, really good. But, I mean, perhaps he's just been unfortunate, and everybody he's worked for has been badly paid. But if you go across the Dartford Bridge or tunnel into Essex, you will earn a bit more money for whatever reason. However, you've then got that commute, either daily or weekly, adding that on to your costs. So are you really better off? And weirdly, like where I am in Suffolk, which is rural, and as far as I'm aware, the one thing we don't really have here is an RDC of any description that I can think of. In fact, I'll tell a lie, one has opened recently at Stowmarket, but for the range, I believe. I don't know if it's Gregory's doing the haulage or what's going on with it, but traditionally, an RDC opens and it pushes wages up everywhere, doesn't it? Because obviously, they offer the good wages. People tend to go for it, so local hauliers have to put their money up. But, I mean, there are a few, like, take Felix, though, for example. In a roundabout fashion, all the container drivers are earning around the same. They're just paid in different ways and structures. It all kind of equates. There are some that earn a little bit more with, like, the slightly smaller hauliers and whatnot than the bigger ones, but it's kind of swings around. But generally speaking, and like the bulk haulage, it seems to pay a bit more, even though it's harder work on the vehicle and the driver, seems to pay a little bit more above the minimum wage, which compared with, like, Kent, I did find surprising myself, to be honest.
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot of really good family-run hauliers out there, and they're all, you know, and they've always got a good core of drivers, but it's quite often difficult for them just to get that last couple of drivers in. Yeah. You know, they've always got a kind of couple of lorries that have got constantly changing guys that are always like hopping about. And, you know, the wage rises go up and things. It's kind of predicated on you being good at your job, and there's a lot of, like, drivers have painted themselves into a corner in a certain aspect as well by sort of demanding vehicles way above and beyond what you need to do to do the job.
Yeah.
I was speaking to a guy this week who said his boss, he knows a guy, the boss had bought the guy an MAN TGX 580, that's a big D38 engine, and the guy, and he's not young either, the sat nav's not working in it. So he's saying, he's coming back saying it's undrivable. I'm not driving it because the sat-nav isn't working. There's guys that are, like, going in and moaning like mad because the lorry's come and it doesn't have top lockers in it and it's got a top bunk in it.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, it's unfortunate, you know, that. But somehow life's just going to have to go on. And, yeah, you know, it's like, oh, 460, I don't want to drive a 460. Oh, no, it's got to be a 500. Or I'm not driving an Iveco Stralis. I'm not driving a DAF CF. I'm not driving a Renault Premium, going back about that. But
also, are these drivers as well being as efficient as they can to try and make the company profitable to actually enable a wage rise? Because I used to have this argument with several people who I used to work with. Price of diesel in Europe, you know, people would fill up, they would drive through Luxembourg where it's really, really cheap, and then fill up in France because they couldn't be bothered to queue. And
I thought you always filled up in Luxembourg. I thought that was like a thing.
Well,
if you've got a brain, I suppose.
There you go. If you've got a brain and you're involved in actual general haulage, I dare say you'd probably get a written warning. But it's funny because a friend of mine was sat there with me who had done general haulage from a general haulage background, and he turned around to a couple of these guys who were sort of talking about it, and he said, if I ran a company and you did that, I would sack you. Just, yeah. You know, I mean, the difference in price is astronomical, and you just think, yeah, these people are probably demanding higher wages, but are they actually being really efficient and productive to actually warrant the extra pay that they're demanding?
Yeah, well, the chap I was speaking to said he actually finds that the grafters, the ones like the best guys, are the ones that aren't, like, they're the ones that don't ask for, they're not the ones like asking for the extra. And it seems to me that there's not a driver shortage. I've said it before, there's a good driver shortage.
Yes.
And in terms of hauliers, there's a great, there's a, such a huge differential between the guys who will pay for your parking, who will look after you, and the ones who just don't care.
Yes.
So there's probably a bit of a, is there a shortage of good hauliers? Perhaps, or maybe it's the ability of good drivers to seek out good hauliers and stuff. I mean, I don't know, but trucks are certainly another pressure for hauliers as well, because they need to be mindful of what they're buying, because even if they're never having to do nights out, they need to be mindful of residuals, and they have to get trucks that people are going to want to drive.
Yes.
So there's places that are never really doing any weight. They could get by with, you know, a small cab, 420, whatever, but they've got to go for the great big cab, 500, to get people through the door to drive them.
Yeah, and just get rid of it at the end of its life.
I don't know. What do you think, guys? We'll leave that open to you. Motor Transport is a sister company publication to Truck and Driver. You have to register on the website to read the articles, but it's very much worth doing so, and I recommend that you do, because that was an interesting debate that came up there with some unexpected responses from both drivers and hauliers.
Yeah, I'd love to hear some people's views. Yeah, because I know hauliers, small operators and drivers alike, so I'd be interested for people to message me and with their thoughts. Obviously, I mean, I would love to be on, say, £20, £25 an hour. It'd be wonderful, but you've got to be realistic. And then you price yourself out of a job, simple as that. And I've got a mortgage to pay and quite a lot of bills, as we discussed right at the start of this.
Yeah, well, everything, like I say, everything's going up for everybody, like, all the time. I mean, you're in the supermarket, prices have shot up like 3 or 4 times on basic stuff this year.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. It's jammy wagon wheels are now £1.65 a packet for 6.
Shocking.
At the local co-op. And that is, quite frankly, disgraceful.
Yeah. I think you should go on strike.
There used to be £1 for 8 not that long ago.
Well, don't get me started on Freddo's.
Oh, well, that's the indicator of inflation, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Freddo costs, because once upon a time, were they not 10 pence or something?
They certainly were 10 pence.
How much are they now? Like a quid or something?
I don't know. I haven't looked for quite a while, but I think they were over 30p, I think it was. Shocking.
Yeah, they'll be half the size.
Yeah.
On that note...
Yes.
How much is Alfredo?
Yeah, we don't need an answer to that. I can look in the shop at that.
Yeah, Matt, it's been wonderful to catch up. Hope you enjoyed the podcast, guys. Truckfest Scotland will be next, so I will be reporting on that in the next podcast, possibly even about that Volvo XXL if I can get my hands on it. take care, keep it out the ditch.
Lovely.
Catch you later.
Cheers, ta-da.
Cheers, bye-bye, bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Truck and Driver podcast, sponsored by Fortune Tyres. Fortune Tyres and International Tyres, bringing you innovation and reliability to support your operation. Learn more at internationaltyres.com/fortune or call 0121 552 6888. Drive forward with Fortune Tyres.